Hey, everybody. I just wanted to preempt this podcast a little bit to give the proper respect to Rish Outfield for editing this podcast. He pretty much does all the editing work on the Delusions of Grandeur episodes that we have. And I really appreciate the work that he does to make this possible. It literally is the most grueling part of doing a podcast. It's going through the editing, especially if we have more than two of us. That's even more work. It makes for great episodes, but it also makes for longer editing time. I just wanted to say that on the podcast and thank Rish publicly. Thanks, Rish. I know for sure that I could not do this without you. So now that I've done that, on to the podcast.
Me too.
Okay.
I'm standing here in pieces, and you're having to lose the Grandeur.
It's a dark time for the Podosphere. Marshal Latham, striking from a hidden base, has won his first victory since forming the Journey Into podcast. During the battle, he managed to steal Rish Outfield away from the Doomsdief podcast, forming an alliance between them based on their love for Star Wars. Pursued by the Empire's sinister agents, Marshal and Rish believe they have something interesting to say about the decades-old franchise, its characters, the players behind the scenes, and the new adventures to come. Clearly, they must be suffering from delusions of grandeur.
Welcome to the... I have three different things that I do. Let's see.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
Welcome to the Journey Into podcast and a Delusions of Grandeur episode where we talk about Star Wars. You know, we've talked about Luke Skywalker and we've talked about Princess Leia, but we haven't had a episode dedicated to our good old buddy Han Solo. So tonight, that's what we're going to talk about. We wanted to talk about this before the new Solo movie came out. And then we can talk about that movie afterwards. So I guess we'll all introduce ourselves. I'm Marshal Latham.
I'm Rish Outfield. Chewie here says you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system.
Awesome.
And I'm Renee Chambliss, and I'm a Han girl, so I'm really happy to talk about Han Solo.
Yeah, we're lucky to have Renee with us again. Actually, our last episode we talked with Renee about The Last Jedi, and it was a little bit late in coming to us, but we got that episode out, and in that episode, we talked about getting together and talking about Han Solo, so we're trying to stay true to our word here. So maybe to start it off, I guess, Renee, you say you're a Han girl.
Yeah. Well, just, okay, so I've said this before, so I'm sorry for people who have heard me say this a million times, but, you know, I grew up with Star Wars. I was 7 when the first Star Wars came out. I was 13 or 14 when Return of the Jedi came out. So I, you know, grew up with Star Wars. And, you know, the girls that I knew growing up, there were Luke girls and there were Han girls. There were the girls who liked Luke better and there were the girls who liked Han better. And I was in the latter camp. So that's what I mean by that.
Yeah, that's, I never had that dynamic.
No. No, because there was only Leia, so...
Right, so we were all united. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if my sister, if she had a preference or not, or if she talked about that, but she definitely did like Han, I know that, so...
Yeah. I'm guessing there probably are more Han girls than Luke girls, but... That's just, you know, off the top of my head.
He's the bad boy, right?
Exactly. But he's good, like in down deep inside, he's good.
He is. Yeah. Growing up, other than being attracted to him, I guess, what did Han mean to you as a kid, and kind of how's that changed as you've, you know, changed into an adult and saw him in the...
Okay.
Actually, Rish, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. I've told you this before. I saw Return of the Jedi first. I didn't see the other two in the theater, and so I always knew Han as the one that was going to get the girl. I didn't participate in those schoolyard discussions about who Leia was going to choose. And so maybe that influenced a little bit of my perception of Han, in the same way that somebody who saw Force Awakens first and then went back to see the original trilogy would know Han as, oh, this is the guy that Kylo Ren kills when he was young. But Han was funnier than Luke. The whole Chewbacca thing was really, really cool. There's something exotic about Han because he's a pirate, because he doesn't play by the rules. Maybe he's an anti-hero or what do they always call? There was the old trope of the hooker with a heart of gold, but there was something else in like the old westerns. The outlaw with the heart of gold, let's say that. Han had a certain allure because, you know, he's the one that ends up with the only girl in the galaxy. But also, just apart from that, Han had so much more fun in life than Luke did. Han didn't care about the rules. Han was free. He sought adventure and excitement and profit and all the things that Jedis don't seek. And he had the Millennium Falcon and a cocky attitude and all the best lines. Mm-hmm. And it didn't mean that I didn't like Luke, but Han's life just looked so much better. Luke was earnest and serious, and he wanted so much to do the right thing. And Han, even though he ends up doing the right thing in the end, he just didn't care about how he got there. And that seemed like a lifestyle. It seemed like freedom. It seemed better as a boy. And and of course, I didn't logically think of any of this as a child. Mm-hmm. So this is my adult feelings for Han as well. There's more of a freedom in his lifestyle. There's more of an accessibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't always do the right thing. And he was conflicted. And I think that's why a lot of people were drawn to his character, because he was sort of, there's a lot of sort of black and white in Star Wars. You're either on the dark side or you're on the light side. You know, you're all for the rebellion or you're totally for the Empire. And Han was kind of in the middle. He was a more complicated character, and that's always interesting. You know, I saw New Hope first, and, you know, from actually in all three, he has this pull because he has this issue with Jabba the Hutt. He's got this problem. You know, he can't, even if he wanted to, he can't be as openly sort of committed to the rebellion as everyone else, because he's could be killed at any time by these bounty hunters. So that gives him, there's more to him, I think, in some ways.
Yeah. You know, Luke was obviously supposed to be the main protagonist of the series, and especially the first movie, where we're focused a lot on his journey once we meet him, once the droids meet up with Luke. But we really do see Han go through his own arc, even in the first movie, where he makes that decision to join the rebellion, or at least help the rebellion, and not only care about himself. He was trying to be the non-caring smuggler that just kept his nose, well, not his nose clean, I guess, but definitely his own affairs in order, and didn't want to get involved.
In it for the money.
Did it for the money, yeah.
I mean, that's what he says. I expect to be paid. Like, that's why he's doing it at the beginning.
But I guess, you know, for me growing up, you know, I was around the same age, you know, 7 and 10 and 13 when the movies came out. And, you know, Han was kind of like that cool older kid in the neighborhood that all the younger kids wanted to be like, or, mm-hmm. you know, wanted to follow. And like, he was in high school, you know, he was the cool kid. And that's kind of what Han represented for me. I mean, he was the older kid with more experience, and something I could learn from, where I felt more identified myself with Luke, but that came with all of my shortcomings and inexperience. And so I kind of looked up to Han that way as a kid.
But I could totally see that, because, You know, with Luke, he's learning about all of this. He's sort of being thrust into this world. And Han is already very comfortable in it. I mean, he might not be trying to rebel or working for the Empire, but he can maneuver his way through the world very confidently. And whereas Luke, it's all new to him. So that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And it's just, you know, he's got that confidence. He's got that easy laugh and, you know, just kind of, like Rish said, he's kind of fun and doesn't take it all so seriously as everybody else, even though he knows how serious it is.
So what do you guys think? And we've probably talked about this before, although I don't know that we really talked about the original trilogy just by itself ever. But the whole, you know, who shot first issue, which, you know, happens in A New Hope, in the first Star Wars that's made. And that's like a pretty big part of Han's character. And then it's changed. So, you know, I know most people feel like it should have been kept the way it originally was. But why do you think Lucas, I mean, he'd like to change things, but that's a pretty fundamental change right there. So what do you think about that?
I think he was doing that because he was a new dad. Or, you know, I don't know how old his son was or whatever mm-hmm. when he was doing the special editions. But I think he didn't want to portray that message to kids that it's okay to kill someone or shoot first or, you know, mm-hmm. didn't have that kind of violence. He didn't feel as comfortable with that as he did as a young director trying to make his mark in the world. So I think that's kind of the reason why. But I mean, I think you take that away from Han and that takes away from his development. His, you know, it's a different Han that we see coming back in the Millennium Falcon at the end of A New Hope.
Yeah, it's not as big of a statement if he hadn't been that way originally.
Exactly, yeah. I'm sure you feel the same, Rish.
Well, the question has to be, how rough can Han Solo be before we cease to like him and before he ceases to be a role model for children? And because Lucas has always said that the first Star Wars movie, I guess all of them, that he made were for children. And so maybe the children of the 70s were different from the children of the 90s. Or maybe he had gotten criticism over the past 20 years about that scene.
I'm sure he had. The haters existed even back then.
But the thing with me in January of 97 when that decision was made was I had been a Star Wars fan for, I guess, 15 years at that point. And I had never once considered Han Solo to be a murderer or a bad guy or anything like that. If Greedo had been like some innocent character that we saw...
Like an Ewok.
Okay, for example, Diego Luna's character in Rogue One kills that guy, the crippled guy at the beginning of the movie. And I feel like that was a statement, a very similar statement they were trying to make of who... What's his character's name? Cassian Andor, is that right?
That's correct, yep.
Maybe we would have felt differently about Han, you know, had it been the bartender that he killed or had it been... Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, Greedo is not presented as this sweet, innocent being that Han, you know, ruthlessly slaughters. I mean, Greedo's very threatening to Han, so...
Well, and ultimately it's self-defense, so...
Right, right.
But maybe somebody had said that to Lucas when he was feeling vulnerable and... Like you said, yeah, his son Jet would have been like 2 years old, 3 years old at that time. And he felt like that was a decision that he needed to make either to soften the character of Han Solo or it's even possible that was always Lucas's intention is for us to think Han shot Greedo a split second before Greedo would have shot him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted to make that more definitive and more obvious in the same way that later Lucas would add Darth Vader saying no when the Emperor is killing his son. It was always obvious what was going through Vader's mind, but he felt like I need to clarify this, I guess. And I don't feel like Greedo shooting first is as terrible a sin as a lot of people do, because it I don't feel like it changes Han significantly. I mean, it's not like Anakin Skywalker coming back as a young man, as a 20-year-old at the end of Return of the Jedi. it's just, it was always great the way that it worked. It was kind of a moment where you cheered because he was fast, because he was that kind of guy that is like, okay, well, this guy's going to take my ship over my dead body.
Exactly. I can't negotiate with him, so I'm just going to shoot him. And he's threatening me, and I'm not going to Jabba, and so I can kill him, so I will. And then he throws, you know, sorry about the mess, throws the money down. And
That comes from the Westerns, right? I mean, that's what, you mm-hmm. know, Lucas grew up with, the Westerns and the serials and stuff. I mean, and that happened all the time in serials, you know, the gunslinger guy. And, you know, I guess it would be a generational thing between the 50s and the 90s, where maybe, you know, the sensitivities were a little higher on that.
If the self-defense needs to be clearly laid out.
Yeah.
Whereas back in 77, he didn't feel it needed to be, or as a young man.
It was just like John Wayne.
But I feel like people liked Han. I guess there possibly could be people who were thinking, oh, Han is terrible because he shot first. But I kind of doubt. If there were, they were the small, small, small minority. I mean, most people, that was just part of him, you know? He was kind of, what does he say to Leia? You like me because I'm...
a scoundrel.
A scoundrel, right? He's a scoundrel. Like, that's what he's supposed to be. And so, I don't know. And we like him also because he's a scoundrel, so...
yeah.
And let's go back then just for a second of, I mean, how dark could Han be before he would lose us as a protagonist? It's really, really hard to imagine a different version of Star Wars because, you know, my whole life I've known it one way. Well, two ways, I guess, if we talk about that cantina scene. But every once in a while we will see an anti-hero in a movie who's just too... anti-hero, you know, they're too violent or too nasty, or, you know, it's like, wow, holy cow, it's like that, you know, he allowed that little kid to get killed or something like that, and he's irredeemable. I hope that in the continuing adventures of Han Solo with this new movie that's about to come out, that they leave some rough edges. I think you can be a curmudgeon and you can be selfish and you can make bad decisions and still be loved and still be a good guy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really hope they do that. I think the tolerance for accepting anti-heroes, especially now, is high. I mean, I've mentioned Breaking Bad before to you guys, but and I don't know if you guys have watched all of that, but the acceptance of all the things that Walter White does by sort of a certain segment of the fandom is pretty incredible.
Oh, and I'm among them.
Because the intent was never that we should just sort of accept and love everything that he does. Like, that's not what the storytellers were trying to do with him. But people, like, when they have their guy, we might see this in the real world as well. When people have their guy, they're willing to forgive a lot if, you know, that's their person that they have loyalty to. I don't know, back in 1977, like, would that have been the same thing? Would people have been willing to accept this sort of totally despicable Han? Like, I don't think that was ever the point for him. I think he was supposed to be someone to play off of Luke. Like, he wasn't this naive farm boy. He had experience. He'd had a hard upbringing. He had to kind of make his way in the world and do what he needed to do to survive. But deep down inside, he had a heart and he cared, and that... you know, came out even in the first movie when, you know, he helps. And
yeah, and, you know, and he was kind of the foil for the Force.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
He was the other side. He was the skeptic.
He was like the atheist when it comes to the Force. So.
Right. And, you know, I love that scene where, you know, Luke's going against the remote and Han just laughing at him when he's getting zapped mm-hmm. and goes through the whole thing, you know, no... Master Force controls my destiny, or whatever he says there, you know, so he plays that role in the movie as well. Mm-hmm. But I guess, Rish, you know, going back to here, what would it take for us not to like him? I don't know, you know, maybe for him to consider betraying Ben and Luke on the Death Star or something like that, just to save his own skin. Even if he was making motions toward that, that might have made us not trust him as much or not care for him as much, even if he made the decision ultimately not to do that. And I think they definitely played off of that with DJ or whatever in the Last Jedi. And I don't want to get off talking too much about The Last Jedi, but we were expecting him to be a Han Solo type character or to you know, maybe join the ranks or whatever. But that was foiled as well. But, you know, Han never wasn't considering that. You know, he was just going to sit tight and wait till the old man turned off the tractor beam. But he wasn't going to try to sell him out or whatever to save his own skin there.
I totally agree. And I also think sort of my female young girl perspective, he liked Leia from the beginning. Like originally, you know, she's beautiful. And so he's responds to that. But the way she was, like, he respected her. He appreciated her, you know. She didn't put up with what he was doing, and he liked that. And so, you know, as a young girl, as a young woman, like, I liked that that's how he reacted to her. He respected her and appreciated her, and that was awesome.
Yeah, and just, you know, thinking back to the original movie, I was a pretty young kid, and I didn't catch everything, you know, back then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I remember, you know, when he says, "Good job, kid, don't get cocky." And my uncle, who was watching it with us, he laughed. He thought that was funny. And I just kind of remember looking at him and kind of, you know, smiling and laughing along. But I didn't really understand what cocky meant at the time. Mm-hmm. But that scene where, you know, Luke comes into the cockpit and says, "You know, what do you think of her?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm trying not to, kid." And he's like, "Oh, good." And then, yeah. Of course, he just kind of puts his arms back and says, "Well, I don't know. What do you think? A girl like that?" And just, you know, that's
a princess
perfect.
And a guy like me.
Yeah. You know, that's quintessential Han right there. Just he knows he's got a victim there. So he's going to push it. But. So I guess, you know, we've talked a lot about the first movie. You know, and of course, the relationship between Han and Leia grows in Empire Strikes Back. And we see that little bit of competition there between Luke and Han still. But by the end of the movie, of course, we know that Leia has fallen for Han. And of course, vice versa, like we said. But
well, that the torture scene is pretty significant, I think, in Empire Strikes Back. He is tortured to kind of draw Luke in and... Yeah, I don't know why he's doing this. He's not even asking me any questions.
Yeah.
That's pretty dramatic. And again, sort of thinking back to my, I guess, 10-year-old self when Empire Strikes Back came out, like that movie ending with Han Solo being frozen, that was really disturbing, you know, kind of one of those like, whoa, like how could the movie be ending like this? Like that can't be right.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was key in that, even though the whole revelation about Darth Vader being Luke's father, like that was like kind of the big thing. But still, Han being treated the way he was and the whole, you know, "I love you, I know," and then he's frozen and sent away, that packed a big punch.
Renee, can you tell me, do you remember how you felt when Han said, "I know," instead of "I love you too"? Marshall, a couple episodes ago, read somebody's angry letter to Starlog magazine saying about that line from 1980, and they were upset, and it was like, "Hey, when a woman says, 'I love you,' you say, 'I love you too, mister.'" And I just laugh at that because, you know, it's the second most iconic line in that whole movie.
Right. No, I accepted it completely, and I'm not sure what that says about me or about the times, but to me, like, that totally fit, and it wasn't an insult. It was that's Han, you know, that's how he is. And in our last podcast, I'm not sure if this made it into the podcast because I haven't listened to it yet, but I threw out there that I thought that Han was similar to Mr. Darcy.
Sure, sure.
And in more reflection, they're not exactly the same at all. But what is it? What they have in common is this: you have to work for their affections. You can't just take their affections for granted. And I think that's completely Han, you know. And especially in that situation, he's about to be frozen. Like, how scary is that? He's not the type of guy who's going to be sort of romantically professing his love in front of everyone right before he's about to be possibly killed. So, I don't know. I thought it fit completely. And I don't think it bothered Leia. You know, I don't think she was offended or upset by that. You know, again, as a 10-year-old watching it, I was not. I mean, it rang totally true. It fit his character.
And I think, you know, he showed that in the scene just before that when he settled down Chewbacca. He's like,
yes,
look, listen, you need to look after her.
Right. If he didn't care, he wouldn't much have done that.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a pretty powerful scene, that whole setup.
And who knows, it could have been even a sort of trying to lighten the moment for her instead of it being this big emotional, like, yes, I know, I love you too, you know, kind of being ripped apart sort of big, sad scene. Maybe he was trying to lighten it for her.
Well, he does give that smile right before the thing goes off too, which has always been really subtle and really nice, because you can tell the guy is scared at this point. I mean, who wouldn't be? And maybe if John Williams is telling us the guy is scared by just the way the music is building and building and building, and then he gives this just the hint of a smile, like it'll be all right.
Yep.
And there is a lot of depth in that scene, which is, I think, why people go back to it over and over and over again.
Well, and to fast forward to when, to Return of the Jedi, when she is the one who unfreezes him and he says, who are you? And she says, someone who loves you. Like, if she were completely just mad that he had said it that way, you know, that's not how she would respond. Like, she knows him and he knows her, and that's how they are together. And I don't know, it didn't bother me, but I can also understand why someone might have a problem with it, but I didn't.
And I'm sure we've covered this before, and correct me if I'm speaking out of turn, but that was an improv, that was an ad lib from Harrison Ford, right?
Right. The scripted line is, I love you too, and remember that because I'll be back.
Yeah.
And Harrison felt like that was just too much, too many words. And so I think on just one of the takes, he ad libbed, I know. And Kasdan and Kirshner, who were running the show at that point, just loved it. And so all the other takes were him saying, I know.
No, it was perfect.
And Lucas didn't find out about this until the footage was shipped back to California, where Lucas was, for the editing.
And again, like from a sort of feminist perspective, you get that callback in Return of the Jedi where he says to her, I love you. And she looks at him and says, I know, you know, like it's, I think that's something that is great about the way their relationship is portrayed, is that they are equals. You know, she is not a shrinking violet. Like, she can take care of herself and make things happen on her own. And so can he. And they appreciate that about each other. And
yeah,
it's actually, if we're going to jump to the later movies, it's sad what ends up happening. Although I can again, it's very believable.
Hey, so Rish, did Lucas, did he appreciate that when he heard that?
Well, I don't want to vilify the guy, but he did not like it. And he had felt like Kirshner had taken the movie away from him because Lucas wasn't there to oversee everything. And so that's why Kasdan was on the set at the time. By this point, Lucas had sent Lawrence Kasdan there to be sort of his representative, to be his emissary there. And Kasdan ended up siding with Kirshner on a lot of these decisions. And most of them were just dialogue and how things were supposed to feel. Kirshner was just a different kind of man, an older man from a different mindset. And I think nobody ever told Irvin Kirshner that this was a movie for children. So his point of view was so different than Lucas's. And then when Return of the Jedi came around, Lucas picked somebody who would do what he said, who would act out his will and his vision. And I think he was much more pleased with how Return of the Jedi came out.
But isn't that kind of sad? Because Empire Strikes Back is thought to be like the best of them, right?
Right. And that's bittersweet, isn't it?
Yeah, I know it is.
That the one that everybody says was the best was the one that Lucas had the least control over. But that just shows how important collaboration is, and that you can get inspiration from all sorts of people, and the actors can bring something to the table that you never would have expected. And yeah, that line, the I know, it pays off in such an excellent way with that line in Return of the Jedi that you mentioned.
that joke would not have ever happened
without it.
In planning, it just happened organically.
Yeah.
Which is as it should be.
But yeah, Kirshner was there pretty much at the end of his career. He only made two more movies after Empire Strikes Back before he retired. But, I mean, wow. Empire is the one that is still amazing today from a writing standpoint, from a thematic standpoint.
Well, and the how it affects the viewer, you know, it's...
And Renee, I think I know the answer to this, but have you seen Avengers Infinity War by any chance?
I have.
Oh, okay.
And well, it sort of relates to the Star Wars discussion and our Han discussion, because I saw the Han trailer because I saw Infinity War. I mean, I don't know how you guys avoid it if you're going to see these movies where it's shown, but I tried not to pay attention, but...
I'm embarrassed to say I closed my eyes.
Yeah. Put your fingers in your ear. No, 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 I'm not listening. No, I saw Infinity War on Friday morning, and there are so many of the Marvel movies that I have not seen. The reason I went to see Infinity War, and maybe this isn't the appropriate place to talk about it, but...
As long as we don't go too far.
I'll just briefly mention it, is because of my son's reaction. He saw it Thursday night, and I have never... The way he texted me after it was over, just with... Basically, it was the texting equivalent of a jaw drop. And I haven't seen that kind of reaction from him before. And, you know, he's like, there's going to be spoilers. And it's just like, oh, I've never seen anything like this. And so I decided to go see it myself on Friday morning. And I can see the Empire parallels. I get why you brought that up.
Right. Well, Big Anklevich yesterday, or he went and saw it by himself because he just was sick of people trying to spoil things to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went and saw it first thing in the morning by himself. And he texted me as soon as he came out of the theater. And he said, "The Empire Strikes Back for this generation."
Yep.
And there are parallels of how brave are these filmmakers that they could do something this
drastic.
Shocking and yeah. drastic and dark and grim.
Yeah.
Again, a movie that is considered for children. And then, yeah, we've got a year to talk about Infinity War and how are they going to get out of this mess? And
well, right.
And you guys had 3 years and suddenly, you know, that's...
Yeah, you spoiled brats.
I always envied the people that saw the original trilogy when they came out in theaters and you know, in little bits and pieces. And, oh, hey, guys, did you hear there's going to be a Christmas special? And, oh, hey, guys, they announced the title of the next movie. And all that, because as a child, 3 years was an eternity.
It was. And there was no internet. There were no message boards dissecting all of this, like, you know, to death. It was, yeah, it was a different time. And I'm grateful for it, too. But yeah, it was crazy. I mean, that to end that way and to know you had 3 years to know what was going to happen.
Yeah, people today are definitely spoiled.
Like with Infinity War, we know we have a year, basically, and possibly less because we have the other movie that's going to come out before that. But yeah, it was very different back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Well, okay, let me take both of you back to 1980 then. Was there a guarantee in your mind that Han was going to be all right, that Han was going to be back? Because, and Marshall already knows this, and Renee, maybe you do too. Initially, Lucas commissioned Alan Dean Foster to write a treatment for a sequel to Star Wars, which ended up being Splinter of the Mind's Eye, a book that Alan Dean Foster wrote. And he wasn't sure if Harrison Ford would sign on for a second one. And so he told Foster to go ahead and write it without Han and Chewie.
Oh.
And then Star Wars came out and was a gargantuan success. And so it was a guarantee that they'd be able to make a huge one and that, you know, Harrison was willing to come back. But there was still talk after Empire Strikes Back of would Harrison Ford do The Revenge of the Jedi, the third one? And they had written an out in case he didn't. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
With the carbonite thing with, what if he doesn't survive? He's worth a lot to me. You know, that stuff. So I wonder... If as a child, I mean, you wouldn't be privy to what Harrison Ford is doing.
Right.
But what if Han had not come back for Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi?
There were the two bombshells. The Harrison Ford or Han Solo being frozen was kind of secondary to the whole Luke's being Darth Vader's son. Like, that was the biggest part of Empire ending like it did. So I don't remember thinking, gosh, what if Han is dead? I don't remember thinking that. I was just like stunned and horrified and like, how can it end like this? I don't know, Marshall, did you have a different reaction?
Well, I guess I was optimistic. I mean, we knew that Chewbacca and Lando were on their way to go try to rescue Han, and there was some kind of plan. But, of course, it was very vague, and we didn't know what it was. So I was optimistic, but I did have, you know, some thoughts about, you know, is he going to be okay? Is he going to be frozen like that forever kind of thing? But it wasn't like I didn't worry for 3 years about Han Solo. But they do spend a significant portion of the, you know, the beginning of Return of the Jedi laying all that out, you know, where Han is rescued. They could have made it a lot shorter, but I'm glad they didn't, because I love all that stuff.
Well, and I'm glad he came back. Can you imagine if he didn't?
Yeah.
The whole movie would be totally different. I mean, it wouldn't be Return of the Jedi. The whole stuff with, you know, C-3PO being a god and all of that. I mean, the absurdity of that is seen through Han's eyes. You know, not to mention all the stuff with Leia and the risk to the Millennium Falcon, like letting Lando have it. Like, I mean, he's such a huge part of that movie, so no Harrison Ford. It would have been totally different.
I did like that, though, how they departed from the, you know, the same formula of Han and Chewie and the Millennium Falcon, where they were on a different mission. They took the shuttle mm-hmm. to Endor, and they were the ground force. So you saw a different side of Han Solo, I think, on that mission. Of course, by then he was General
yeah.
Solo.
Do you think my sense was always that he didn't really like that or care about it, you know? They just called him General, but it kind of embarrassed him.
Yeah, or at least, you know, he didn't take it as seriously as everybody else did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, he gets all the good lines, you know, fly casual and all of that. Like,
to me.
And I loved the scene with him and Leia, you know, in the Ewok village. I mean,
that's what I was going to bring up.
Because, yeah, that's obviously, that's so uncomfortable for him to have that kind of conversation with her. You know, he wants to know. And he, again, this shows that deep down he's a good person because he's going to let her, you know, choose who she wants to choose.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the most significant Han scene in Return of the Jedi is that, oh, could you tell Luke? Is that who you could tell that scene?
Yeah.
And then he apologizes.
Yeah.
And I always got the impression this is a guy who doesn't apologize. He's above that. You know, that's what losers do and all that. Or that's what people who are wrong do, and I'm not wrong. But he has been changed by his relationship with these people and maybe by his time in prison, in suspended animation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's willing to humble himself and I really love that moment where you see the decision be made, where he's angry and he chooses not to be angry anymore. And he says, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's great. So here's my question about this new movie. So we see this evolution of Han, like his growth, like his how he changes. So this new movie is him as a young man where arguably he hasn't had all these realizations and he is less mature. Do you think we'll have trouble sort of accepting this character as sort of the super young, super brash, super cocky person before he grows?
Well, I think that they have a lot of leeway because they can show whatever they want as long as they're saying, but eventually he will, these are the things that make him into the Han Solo that you guys know and love.
Make him jaded and
so he can be super idealistic and Boy Scouty. He can be the Tatooine farm boy when this movie begins, if they want him to, and then have his heart broken, or then have him be betrayed, or then have him lose. And he's just like, oh, well, that's what getting close to somebody does to you. And you can see the changes in him as the movie progresses. And I don't know if in the back of their minds there will be a solo 2 and a solo 3 and a solo 4. And if so, then you can just mete it out a little bit at a time. But maybe this is their one shot at a Han Solo origin movie, and they'll show all of that stuff. And when the movie ends, he will be
Han Solo. I'm Captain, I'm Captain of the Millennium Falcon, the guy that we saw at the beginning of Star Wars.
But yeah, I'm giving them a ton of, what's the word I'm looking for? Good faith. Mm-hmm. That they can take me where they'd like, and I'll go with it. As long as I can see the seeds of the tree that is to come later will grow into.
Yeah, Renee, I heard part of the trailer in the theater when I was watching Avengers.
So did you really like plug your ears and say, no, 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 I'm not listening?
I didn't plug my ears, but I closed my eyes and I tried not to pay attention too much. But I guess you, having watched the latest trailer or the newest trailer.
Right. I saw it. But I mean, there were this is a complaint I have. There were 20 minutes of trailers before the movie started.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there were so many. It was kind of ridiculous. And there were movies that I want to see, like Incredibles 2 and all of that. But after you're seeing one after the other, it's like, okay, come on, we're here to see a movie. But anyway.
I completely agree. Seeing that trailer with Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you feel confident or better about?
I guess I feel slightly better than I did before. You know, I will be honest and say I don't have high hopes for this movie. I mean, Harrison Ford is so Han Solo. And I think it's a tall order for any young actor to try to live up to that. The only comparison I have is Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan. And he did do a great job, you know, I thought. I don't know if you guys disagree. I mean, I thought he really embodied that spirit that Alec Guinness had and was able to be the younger Obi-Wan in a great way. So I understand it's possible, but to be able to convey that Han that we love, the Harrison Ford Han, it's going to be hard. It's going to take a lot to win me over. And from what I saw of the trailer, I mean, I'm not like, oh, it sucked or, oh, it was great. I'm sort of like, let's wait and see.
Yeah, I guess I'm pretty excited for the movie. I'm trusting, you know, a lot of people say that it's the best script that's ever been written for Star Wars.
Wow. And, who wrote the script? Do we know?
Kasdan did.
Lawrence Kasdan.
Yeah, I think Lawrence Kasdan and his son wrote it together.
Wow.
Does that sound right, Marshall?
Yeah, yep, that's what I've heard.
Well, and we're all writers, and we know that it starts with the good writing, so.
So hopefully, with all the shakeup and Ron Howard and everything, that's not diminished at all. But I don't know, I've got high hopes for it. I'm looking forward to go see it. You know, we'll see.
It's a tall order.
Definitely. Well, do we want to talk about Force Awakens much, or do we want to stick to the original trilogy?
No, we've got to talk about Force Awakens. I just because for a long time, Harrison Ford, it's not that he seemed embarrassed by Han Solo, but he just didn't want to talk about it like he wanted to talk about his other film roles, like he wanted to talk about Indiana Jones. He had no problem when people would ask him about, when are you going to make another Indiana Jones? And I'm not sure if he had a better time making those movies, whether it was Spielberg versus Lucas, or whether it's just, you know, Indy had more to him that Harrison could sink his teeth into. But for
Indiana Jones, he was the title character.
That's true.
Whereas in Star Wars, he's one of the main characters, but he's not the main character. I don't know if that was why, but I could see that being a difference.
Well, I think, and again, Rish, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was pushing for Han Solo to die in Return of the Jedi, and I think he was a little bit upset at the changes that were made to make it more kid-friendly and happy at the end.
Well, see, it's hard to say, because Ford is at the very, very end of the studio system, and he had been taught, and you've heard him say it a bunch of times, that you don't diss the project that you're working on, you don't. Your job is to promote it and to say it's great and to get people to go to it. And so even like in retrospect, he was hesitant to throw anybody under the bus or to criticize those movies. But yeah, that there was that talk that he wanted Han to die, that he felt like it would give the rebels winning a cost. You know what I mean? It's just like some bitter with the sweet. But I think Lucas was just done with the series and he wanted to tie things up with a happy ending. And we got it in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
But yeah, then Michael Arndt wrote this script for The Force Awakens. And none of us really know what was in that script or how much of it changed. I got the Art of the Last Jedi book. And at the very beginning of that book, it has 15 or 20 pages of stuff from the Art of the Force Awakens book that they didn't want to release, that J.J. Abrams said, you can't put this in the book because it's all about the end of the movie. So they put it in the beginning of The Last Jedi. And in that, the character of Kira, who became Rey, was so enamored with Han Solo. And, you know, he was her father figure and all that, that when he is killed, she dresses in a Han Solo outfit for the final fight with Kylo Ren. Mm. And she's got like the blood stripe on her pants and the vest and all that. And I just thought, wow, what a cool idea, whether they went with it or not. But it's just stuff like that was really, really neat. But I think the plan was always, even in the very first draft that Arndt did before J.J. Abrams was hired, Han was going to die. They had come up with different ways that his son was going to kill him, and they decided to have it be something small rather than like a big dog fight or, you know, the destruction of the Millennium Falcon or anything like that. Just like the two of them looking in each other's eyes.
Kylo Ren's decision to do it.
And maybe that was always part of the deal in getting Harrison to come back
right.
for one more of these, was that, yeah, this is the last one and you've got to kill Han Solo.
Okay, but I find it hard to believe that Harrison Ford preferred Indiana Jones to Star Wars. I mean, I love them both, but it's not like one was super serious and the other was super cheesy. I mean, they were both kind of equivalent, don't you think?
Well, we could try and imagine why he feels that way.
Why does he feel that way?
Maybe it's the special effects. Maybe he felt like Lucas cared way more about the technical aspects than he did about the actors. And you know, I don't know.
To me, they just seem very much in the same vein. It's not like one is Schindler's List and the other is Spy Kids, you know? I mean, but I'm not Harrison Ford, so.
Yeah, I think as the movies, the Indiana Jones movies progressed, especially with the Crystal Skull, which, you know, could be good or bad, I guess, depending on your point of view. Bad. But Harrison and Steven Spielberg and George Lucas had to agree on it. And I don't know if that was going around with Temple of Doom and Last Crusade or not, but, you know, maybe he had more say in Indiana Jones.
Well, again, he was the guy in those movies.
Yeah.
But it's ironic because he's the one of all of these actors who really had such a varied career, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess maybe that's why he was bothered by playing Han Solo, but I don't know. I mean, from a story perspective, Kylo Ren killing Han Solo, I thought was very effective and raised the stakes, and it fit. It wasn't gratuitous, I didn't think.
Well, and it showed a different side of him, too. I mean, when he decides, you know, when Kylo's walking out on the terrace or whatever, and he's kind of hiding there and letting him go by, and he just decides, I can't let this moment go. I have to try one last time. Mm-hmm. You know, Leia asked him to, or, you know, whatever. So he went out there and he put his heart out there for his son and, you know, said, come back. And I don't know what he was thinking right at the last minute when he realized that it was over. But, yeah, that was a totally different side of Han that we hadn't seen before.
Well, so is the spiritual Han that tells them about the Force and the light side and the dark side, the Jedi. And I remember all of us talking about that when that trailer came out, of how strange it was that Han is the missionary in that trailer.
Yeah.
But we didn't know at the time that Luke's not even in the movie.
Right.
And maybe in the Michael Arndt version where Kira goes to Luke and starts getting trained, Luke said those things. But I don't know, because it changed so much when J.J. Abrams came on board. But I never disbelieved it when Han says those things. You believe that he has been converted and is happy to share this bit of knowledge with these kids. It's kind of a magical scene. That scene and then his confrontation with Kylo Ren, I think, are the two best Han Solo scenes in the movie.
Yeah. You know, coming from Han, it's different, too. I mean, you know, Han's not a Jedi or an idealist or whatever, you know. So coming from Han, who's a down-to-earth guy just trying to make his way, it means when he says, no, it's real. It's all real. The Force, everything, you know. It packs more of an impact, at least to the characters. I don't know if it did, but to me, it did. Were you guys disappointed in where the relationship between Han and Leia had gone, that he pretty much gone back to his smuggling ways and she'd gone back to her being the politician?
Well, it's sad. It means they have fewer scenes together, and that they're not still together is realistic. We've all seen that happen with our parents or somebody's parents or our own relationships. But I don't know that I was disappointed by it.
It seemed very real and believable to me.
Yeah.
I mean, they're coming from such different places. And then, you think, like, you hear, you know, couples where a child dies or there's some horrible tragedy. It's hard to stay together after that. And you think about what happened with their own son.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to stay together after something like that would be really difficult. And for people like...
with a brother-in-law in the middle of it.
Exactly. People like Han and Leia, who kind of look at the world very differently.
Yeah.
I thought it was sad. I thought it was extremely touching, but I also felt it rang very true.
Well, and the biggest impact for that, you know, was his relationship with Rey. I mean, I loved that, you know, how he's like, hey, I need another more crew members, you know.
Yeah.
Are you offering me a job?
Chewie likes you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was kind of awkward and uncomfortable, but you know, you knew he felt it.
I wouldn't be nice to
you. Yeah.
I would love to have been able to see a flashback to him and Leia, and I guess Ben is the boy's name, when things were good.
Yeah.
And when they were a family and the New Republic was flourishing and stuff like that. And I don't know how you pull that. Well, I guess with technology you can pull that off. But it would have been really neat to just to get a taste of what that was like before things started to fall apart.
Just a moment of happiness.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, there are books and stories and things that can be written about that time. But it just would be very fun to see Han as a new dad, Chewie as a new uncle, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there was, I can't remember, I'd have to look it up, but there was like somebody that did like a little cartoon or a comic strip. It was like Kylo when he was little. I think it mostly featured Chewbacca hanging out with Kylo, but Han was in there too, and I remember thinking that was kind of a neat...
Yeah, I remember that comic. They were saying this is what went through Chewie's mind after Kylo Ren killed Han Solo.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
And he flashed back to the good times that they had with this little boy, and then he fires his crossbow, and he doesn't kill Ben Solo.
Oh, yeah, I have.
He only wounds him. I thought that was kind of sweet.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Have you seen that, Renee?
I haven't. The one I've seen is the artist who does like a Calvin and Hobbes take on it all. Have you guys seen that? It's adorable. It's so cute and sweet. And
sure, yeah.
With little Kylo and Rey is like Susie, and it's very cute. But
I think I've seen that, but I'll have to look that up again.
Yeah. I could send you the link. I've seen it on Instagram. So
if I'm smart, I'll put it in the show notes. So I have a couple questions for you guys. I don't know if they're the final questions, if you guys have other questions, but first one I have is, you know, we've talked a lot about the end scenes and the end of Luke Skywalker's life with The Last Jedi and how fitting that was and poetic and everything. And of course, Han Solo's death was meant to be jarring and shocking and whatever, but do you feel it was a fitting end to Han Solo in The Force Awakens?
Renee, do you want to take this?
Sure. No. I felt like...
Thank you. Okay, I didn't want to be the one that said no.
I felt like it was not great, but that's what made it so impactful. And I love that we're getting, despite my skepticism and how this new movie can really capture sort of the flavor of Han, we get this new movie. So even though it ended, it hasn't ended. So I think that's good. But no, I think it was not a fitting ending. I think it was an awful ending.
Yeah, fitting might have been the wrong word.
I think it was important to the story that was being told. But if you're just looking at sort of the Han character and the importance he's had in all of these stories, no, it sucked. It wasn't a great ending. But it made a big impact, and that's... it's important.
Yeah, I guess The Force Awakens and ultimately this new trilogy isn't about our characters. It's about Rey and Kylo Ren and I guess Poe and Finn to a lesser extent. But it's about those, the big two. But because Leia is in it, because Han is in it, because Luke is in it, I can't help but feel, well, it's their story too, but it's the last chapter in their story. And Han's death... it's not the way that Han Solo should go out, but it does a great deal toward Rey's story and toward Kylo Ren's story. It serves their stories just fine. I still don't really get where they're going with Kylo Ren, and I hope that they know.
Yeah.
What's his name? Snoke says in the new movie that... at the very beginning of the movie, he shows up in front of him and he says, "I killed Han Solo." And he says, "Yes, and this act, it broke you in two inside."
Yeah.
It did more damage than it did good. And I don't know, I mean, those aren't his words, obviously, but it got to the point where he could not kill his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's another step in the direction that Snoke did not want him to go. It feels like they're going somewhere with this, with Kylo Ren. But it's just so strange, the choice of him saying to his father, him looking his father in the eyes and saying, "I know what I have to do, but it's hard, but I don't know if I can do it." And Han says, "Yes, you can." And what he's talking about is killing his own dad.
Right.
I've never really understood that scene. Does Han know what Kylo Ren is saying at that moment? Or does he just say, you know, "Whatever you have to do, I will help you"?
Yeah, I thought it was he thought that he maybe wanted to break away from where he was.
Yeah, I don't think at that point Han realizes what Kylo is considering.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe he does know. Because when he's sent off to confront him, he knows it's not going to be a happy thing.
See, 3 years from now, 2 years from now, we'll be able to write any number of stories about what it was like when Han was raising this boy. And you can say, okay, well, maybe Kylo Ren always had a weak will and Han wanted him to be more decisive. Han wanted him to jump in with both feet the way that he had always done, to really commit to something the way Leia had always done, to not be wishy-washy, to be a man, finally. And maybe that's what Han is saying on this bridge, is come on. If you know what you've got to do, then do it. And that's the step that Kylo Ren needed to become, to fulfill his destiny and all that. But I don't know if they're going to redeem him. We talked about this in that episode, if he's going to have a heroic sacrifice and end up joining the good at the last moment. It feels like they have a plan for him. And him not being able to kill Leia was part of it.
And the link to Rey also.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I have seen Last Jedi a number of times since we've did that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a lot of people that frigging hate Last Jedi. But there's a moment, that moment where Rey and Kylo Ren have killed all of the Praetorian guards. And then he says, join me, you know, come with me. Let's do this thing together. And she says, no. And he says, please. The way he says it is, to me, the best moment for Kylo Ren in that whole movie. It's just heartbreaking. You feel like all of that he has done up to this point is leading to this moment where he is humbled and he needs her to believe in him, to help him get to where he needs to go. And she says, no. I feel like that, again, is going somewhere. Again, I pray that they know where it's going and that it will all make sense when it's over. But I just, oh my gosh, that moment when he says please to her is just, it hits me every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's a tortured character. And, I mean, I think he's been portrayed that way from the beginning. You know, Darth Vader, when we see Darth Vader in New Hope, he is just evil and strong and bad. But that's never how Kylo Ren has been portrayed. And, you know, to kind of bring it back to Han, that those scenes with Han and Kylo Ren, you know, to me, and I'm a parent of like older kids now, I sort of felt like Han couldn't understand his son and was sort of awkward and impotent in a way. Like he couldn't relate to him. He couldn't help him. He didn't really understand him. And I think that's something that totally can happen with parents and kids. And it's sad. And it was obviously very sad. Didn't end well. But I thought it was really real. Anyway, Kylo Ren is a very fascinating character. And his relationships with Han, with Leia, with Rey, it's complicated. You know, he's bad, but he's not. But he's tortured also. And we get to see that, where we didn't with Vader, we didn't with the Emperor, we don't with Snopes. You know, a lot of these super evil characters, they're just evil. But with Kylo Ren, there's pain associated with it too.
Yeah. So Rish, I looked up the movie script online here. Snoke is saying, you have too much of your father's heart in you, young Solo. And then Kylo says, I killed Han Solo. When the moment came, I didn't hesitate. And then Snoke says, and look at you. The deed splits your spirit to the bone. You were unbalanced, bested by a girl who had never held a lightsaber.
Well, yeah, if I had the capability of just dropping in the actual soundbite, I would do that.
Right, right.
I don't know if he thought that killing his father would clear everything up, would make all of the haze go away, and suddenly life would be clear. His destiny would open up for him, and it didn't happen. Yeah, and then he's beaten by this kid, this girl, who he may not have known that she'd never held a lightsaber before, but the audience knew and Snoke knew. And for years, yeah, we would hear people criticize the movie for that. And I think Snoke is speaking for them. It's just like, wow, where your head was at was how this happened. I don't know. I love talking about this stuff because other people will have different perspectives. Renee, you have the perspective of having kids that are out of the nest now. And yeah, I have the perspective of never getting along with my dad. And then realizing my dad was dying and that I had been a disappointment to him. That was weird. It's like when you know that this is the last time that you're going to talk to him, what do you say?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, of course, my mind goes to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that relationship was just fraught with arguments and not seeing eye to eye and not understanding each other. And then after he was gone, people would talk to me and say, oh, this is something your dad did when he was a kid. And I'd be like, really? He did that? That sounds like something I would do. And realizing...
Yeah.
That we were similar in ways. I know this has nothing to do with Han Solo, but it also has everything to do with Han Solo and father figures. And Renee, I don't know if you saw Han as a love interest character or whatever, but, you know, I always saw him as a big brother or a dad or something like that. I never saw Han Solo in myself. I was a Luke person.
No, I guess kind of similar to Marshall. I saw him as the sort of older, cool guy that, yeah, that's who you like. And that was when I was young and the original three movies. But in this recent movie, you know, as being a parent and seeing those sort of struggles, and thankfully, knock on wood, so far, I don't have those kinds of relationships with my own kids. But I can appreciate how that could be, you know, if as parents, you know, you try to be what your kids need, but people are not perfect and we can't be exactly what each other needs. So that's sort of how I saw that whole Han, Kylo Ren interaction. It was awkward and it was uncomfortable and they didn't really seem to kind of connect. That didn't justify one killing the other, but it wasn't the ideal father-son relationship at all. So that's what I took from it.
Well, do you think the boy, Ben Solo, got along better with his mother? Or do you think he idolized Luke and Luke was a father figure to Ben? Because Han didn't have this way with the Force. And Luke explained...
Yeah, I could see some contempt there. These young, cocky... I'm not sure how old Ben was when this happened, the big rift and the big terrible thing. Do we know how old he was when that happened?
I don't think they've ever given us a timeline.
Yeah.
It could have been 3 years. It could have been 5 years. It could have been 10 years.
Yeah.
What do you think, Marshall? I mean, they used Adam Driver, so we know it wasn't 20 years.
Was he 12? Was he 16? You know, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I'm guessing he was, you know, 14 to 17, somewhere in there when that happened.
But that's a time when kids challenge or can challenge their parents and they're trying to sort of make their own way. And yeah, if he is super powerful with the Force, I could see him having contempt for his father who isn't.
And there's the scene in Force Awakens where Kylo is reading Rey's mind and he sees how she feels about Han Solo. And he's like, oh, he's not the... quite the figure you think he is, or I can't remember the wording there, but
you see in him the father you never had. He would have disappointed you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so I thought that was great too. Mm-hmm. Great insight too. That didn't make him happy either.
No.
to see that.
No, and I love that about these movies, the depth to them. It's not simple. It's not easy.
So I don't know if we want to make this the last question. Probably we've been going for a while. What is your quintessential image of Han Solo? Or when you think of Han Solo, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? The first, I don't know, full scene or not, but just what do you see?
Well, I'm going to go very different than everybody else, I think. When I think of Han Solo, I think of him saying, don't worry, she'll hold together. And then under his breath saying, hear me, baby, hold together. You get the bluster. You get this guy that's like, I can do no wrong. And then you see the real Han for just a second there. Who is vulnerable and who is fallible and all that stuff. It just, maybe there are better scenes, but that is just a perfect who Han Solo is. And then also, yeah, that he talks to the ship. Like she's his little girl, or he's like you talk to a horse in a Western.
Well, the Millennium Falcon, to me, that's like Han, you know, flying the Millennium Falcon with Chewie. And it breaks, it doesn't jump to light speed. You know, he's got his maneuvers, like all of that. I just feel he's such a part. That's so him, being that pilot and being able to do these miraculous things with this ship. But it doesn't always work, so...
For me, I always picture the on Endor when they're taking the bunker and he comes out holding his gun or whatever, and then he just kind of shrugs and gives that lopsided grin, you know.
After he's tricked them all out.
Right.
And it worked.
Exactly, yeah. I always think that's Han Solo right there for me.
No, he's a great character. He's awesome.
Yeah. It's never good to second guess Harrison Ford, no. I think, with his instincts for acting, you know. And I guess this is... not only a tribute to Han Solo, but to Harrison Ford. But, you know, the whole Indiana Jones scene with the shooting the guy with the sword and stuff. I mean, that was all ad-lib, too, because he wasn't feeling good. But, I mean, that's just the stuff. I'm sure that happened all the time in a lot of his movies, you know.
Well, and it's such a cool story, too, with him being a carpenter into his 30s. And he was sort of late to be a movie star. And...
Yeah. He kind of brought that genuine charm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you guys have anything you wanted to add before we called it a night?
I just hope I'm wrong. I hope the Han Solo movie is great, and I love it, and I'm super happy with it.
It's weird to hope you're wrong, too, but I do. It seems like it's unfair to hold these movies to this highest standard, where we can talk about something 40 years after it came out, but Star Wars movies really aren't like other movies. There is something more to them and deeper to them. And so, yeah, this new Han Solo movie has to be great.
Right.
It can't just be all right. And there are a ton of people that I think know that are aware of that. Marshall and I were talking before you came on about the bonus features on The Last Jedi Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Just the amount of passion that people put into just the, you know, the background aliens or the costumes or whatever. You know, just like they were so thrilled to be working on a Star Wars movie. You know, they knew it was something special that they would remember for the rest of their lives. That's what these movies have become, at least for the three of us. And so
I think for more than just the three of us.
No, it's our movie, darling.
No, it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. But I'm also kind of nervous because, again, it's just a tall order for this poor actor. So
yeah, he's got a lot to live up to. But yep. Hopefully, you know, we can look past not Harrison Ford aspect of the character and see how he does with his own take on it. All right. Well, I appreciate all of your insights and all of your comments. I'm glad we were able to arrange this before the movie came out so that we could honor the scoundrel that we all grew to love. But thank you out there in the audience listening that hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to give us your own comments or thoughts about Harrison Ford and Han Solo, you can comment right on the blog of the podcast. You can send an email to journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. You can get on the forums at journeyinto.freeforums.org. And you can also, if you'd like to, call the voicemail line at 77JINTO107. May the Force be with you all.
You too, Marshall.
Yes, thanks so much.
And thank you again, Renee.
No, thank you for including me.
No, well, you're busy, but, you know, just in editing the last episode, I was really touched by how much thought you put into these things. It is more, it is special. And a lot of times, Marshall and I talk and I think, well, what do we have to contribute that a million other podcasters haven't? But there is definitely passion and caring and thought. And when you speak, I can feel it with you too. So thank you again for giving us a couple hours.
Of course, I love to talk about it. It's important to me and it's been, you know, I love stories. These are stories that I grew up with and that shaped me into who I am now. So, you know, I don't know as much about all the ins and outs of directors and writers and all of that, but the stories themselves, they were a big deal to me, a big, big deal to me. So it's very fun to talk about it now. Thank you for letting me.
You bet. Good night, everybody.
Joey here says the Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 license. That means you can copy this thing from the inner systems all the way to the Outer Rim territories. Share it with Imperials or your basic rebel types. But you can't change it or try to sell it. If you're in it for the money, you'll have to deal with Chewbacca here. Wookiees are known to pull listeners' ears out of their sockets when they misuse. Hey, it was the chair. I don't care what you smell.
Is everybody there?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Do you hear a weird sound?
I did hear a weird sound. But I can still hear you guys, which is better than before.
You're not at your uncle's house, are you? Yeah.
Oh, the haunted house you're talking about.
Yeah.